Well, we are continuing our focus on strong women today. And Robin Phillips, she's an attorney who's made the professional choice to parlay her strength into creating a better world. As executive director of the Advocates for Human Rights, her work is mission-based, and that mission is to create a world in which all people live with dignity, freedom, justice, equality, and peace. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how is your organization, the Advocates for Human Rights, making a positive change around the globe?
Well, we work through research, education, and advocacy, which means that we partner with organizations in other countries and we document human rights violations and look at the barriers to people enjoying their human rights or keeping women safe or LGBT people having a safe place to live. We look at all different kinds of due process violations. And then we work with the organizations in the country to develop laws and policies and help them get them passed to resolve some of the issues that we've been able to identify through the research, and then also work with the organizations to do training for people who need to be implementing the law and monitoring whether it's effective.
So you've got partners all over.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. Working for the rights of humanity. Human rights. Thank you for doing that. In Minnesota, specifically, how is your organization inspiring change?
Well, we also do a lot of work in Minnesota. We probably half of our work is here. Our biggest project, our program, provides free legal services to people seeking asylum. Our women's rights program also works very hard in Minnesota. We did the initial needs assessment for the state of Minnesota on sex trafficking, and we've been working on law reform related to that and the implementation of the laws, the safe harbor law that was passed, that went into effect rather in 2014. We're now also looking at labor trafficking and how that either overlaps with sex trafficking or is it in itself a separate issue, and what kinds of remedies are important, and we'll start to address that problem.
You mentioned, let's break that down a little bit. You mentioned earlier about creating a safer space for women, and how are you doing that? We'll talk about sex trafficking in just a little bit here, but can you expound on that a little bit?
Sure. Actually, the first report that we did in Minnesota was looking at how battered refugee and immigrant women were accessing the system of safety here in Minnesota. We looked at the counties around the metro area for that research. We were asked by the Battered Refugee and Immigrant Women Task Force to use a human rights methodology to look at how the legal system responded. And we came out with a detailed report and recommendations looking at how courts were working with interpreters and how what were the barriers when women were trying to access services, were trying to seek safety. And we had a whole range of recommendations relating to police practices and interpreter rules, and were able to get many of them implemented. And then from that, we worked on the statewide needs assessment on sex trafficking. So we don't provide direct services to victims of violence here, except in the context of asylum, but we work on the laws and policies that help protect women and provide services to not only keep them safe, but help them improve their lives and empower them to get beyond the issues that have been plaguing them.
How do, you know, refugees know where to go to get help?
Well, there's a big network. Many people seeking asylum are jailed, actually, and we get calls from the jails through networks of immigrant groups. We are on lists. Other legal services refer people to us, and even the immigration service provides our number to people.
Let's talk about sex trafficking a little bit here. Is it a problem here in Minnesota?
It's a big problem here in Minnesota, and we've discovered it's statewide. It's not confined to any particular region. And Minnesota is really in the forefront of providing interventions that are helping people who've been victims of sex trafficking. And actually, there are a system of navigators throughout the state who can channel people into the right services. And there's one here in Bemidji and in Brainerd as well. And you can call the station to get the telephone numbers. That there are ways to access immediately services throughout the state.
What are some things that should alert people that sex trafficking might be happening, that maybe what they're seeing is a sex trafficking experience or something?
Well, I think trusting your gut and seeing something that just looks wrong, if you think somebody's in immediate danger, call 911. We actually have developed resources for different sectors. So if you look on our website, theadvocatesforhumanrights.org, we have resources for teachers to look at things like absences, injuries, various things that look like something's wrong in a child's life, or hotel workers. And there are many indicators of whether something's going on in your hotel. But I would direct people to the website to look at your own sector to see what kinds of clues there are that there's a problem. But I would say mainly trust your instincts and make sure that you get other people involved. And you can call the navigators to make sure people you know are getting connected to important services.
Is sex trafficking, the victims of sex trafficking, more often youth, or the age range? What's the age range for that?
Yes, they're very often youth, and it's from people in marginalized communities, vulnerable populations, teens who are even just in a rebellious stage, but poverty, sexual orientation, gender identity, and things that as young people are discovering who they are, there are certain vulnerabilities associated with that. And there are lots of indicators that may put someone more at risk, and they're usually vulnerabilities and things that traffickers prey on. They provide things. They meet basic needs as a way of pulling people into their sex trafficking rings.
Mm. And a sex trafficker would just be a regular person who lures somebody, might look like a regular person to
exactly.
these kids.
Exactly.
Who lures them in. Once somebody is lured into this system of sex trafficking, well, how dangerous is their life at that point?
It's very dangerous. We're finding that injuries are extremely high, that even death, and that there are many studies on what people experience, and it's a dangerous thing. When a person has purchased another human being for sex, they are in danger. They are in often in confined areas, and we've seen a lot of serious harm done to individuals.
Yeah. What can we do about it?
Well, pay attention. Again, look at resources that relate to the kind of work that you do. Stay engaged. And I think now more than ever, make sure that the people you vote for care about human rights, and that the issues that you're concerned about, ask questions. Hold them accountable when they pass laws and policies that don't support human rights. We have a great system here in Minnesota, one that people around the country look at, and we need to make sure that gets not only stays strong, but gets stronger and provides the necessary resources for the victims of human rights violations right here in Minnesota.
We're talking with Robin Phillips this morning. She's an attorney, and she's also the executive director of the Advocates for Human Rights. It's an organization committed to creating a safer world. Another issue that you are tackling that people may not have heard of yet, but certainly will soon, is labor trafficking. You mentioned it earlier. What is it, and how does it impact us?
Well, labor trafficking is holding people in service for work against their will. And it's difficult. That's just a day-to-day definition of that. And it's very common, and it runs a range. So we have certain kinds of exploitation that might not rise to the level of actually coercing someone into labor against their will. But we also have cases in Minnesota of people being held in bondage or being locked in at night or being coerced through threats to their family in a different country. And what we can do as individuals is ask questions. Ask questions if you're employing another service to provide services to you, like custodial services or housekeeping. Ask questions and just make sure that people are treated well, that they're making at least minimum wage. And again, pay attention and make sure that the laws and policies protect people, that we are electing people who care about what happens to humans living in our state. And that isn't always the first concern, and we need to be holding people accountable for that.
I'd never really heard of labor trafficking until we talked briefly about it yesterday, and I was surprised and horrified at the same time. These are people.
Yeah, and it can happen in agriculture. It can happen in bigger cities, in custodial services, restaurants, really in any place where people rely on low-wage workers. And we're discovering many different cases now in Minnesota. So stay tuned for that. Hopefully we'll be able to provide more information as we develop the protocols for different sectors to be screening for those kind of issues.
A big focus of your efforts is also upholding rights of immigrants and refugees. Talk about that area of your work.
Sure. As I mentioned, we provide free legal services to people seeking asylum, but also we're concerned about what atmosphere they're allowed to stay in. So we're helping them get status to stay in the country, but what is our community? Are we welcoming people? What happens to them? We want to make sure that there is no discrimination. We want to make sure they have equal access to housing and education and other services, that they're not discriminated against, that they're not racially profiled. So we do a lot of public education about that. We work in collaboration with organizations all over the state on how to make communities more welcoming and how to be aware of who our newest Americans are and what they need, and making sure that we open up our communities to them and provide access to being part of the community. And it takes some intentional effort and strategy to do that. So I think being aware of that is really important.
What are some of the strategies we can do to make sure our communities are welcoming and to break down those barriers between cultures?
Well, invite people to things. Provide language access. Bring somebody into your own home or invite them to a book club or another community event. Make sure that they understand ways that they can volunteer. Often people are highly educated, trying to figure out ways to integrate and bring their skills to help. And it makes our community stronger to bring new people and new assets. And if we open up our workplaces, our homes, our churches, other places of worship, we'll be stronger as well.
Talk about how that does make us stronger as a community.
Well, we bring in new ideas, new resources. We're seeing now with low unemployment the need to have new workers, and things like arts and culture and food and new ideas. It's all important and makes us all better.
That's right. How can people get involved in what you're doing, and maybe their organizations might get involved in what you're doing?
Sure. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. We work with volunteers. If you're a lawyer and you want to take an asylum case, we'd love to have you work with us. If there are other ways you want to volunteer, there are organizations that provide important services that protect the human rights of people all over the state. So get involved in that. You can join listservs and hear about issues. You can join our listserv at theadvocatesforhumanrights.org. I keep saying that, but really get involved in the electoral process and make sure that the people that you vote for protect human rights and care about human rights and put that high on their political agendas. But we believe that the only way that we'll make human rights real for every person in Minnesota is to get everyone involved. We want to make sure that not that we have a human rights person at the table to talk about the issues, but that everyone around the table views themselves as a human rights advocate. So there are many ways to get involved with that.
We spoke off air a little about groups that come to communities that are to teach specific things about religions or that kind of a thing. Could you talk a little bit about some of these groups and what people might want to look for before they attend certain meetings?
Sure. We have a big problem in this country with Islamophobia, and there are a number of organizations who put themselves out as educational organizations when in fact they're hate groups identified by organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Anti-Defamation League as hate groups. And they're not actually explaining what Islam is, but they're perpetuating myths and stereotypes and creating more fear where fear doesn't belong. And there are ways if you are you belong to an organization where you do bring in speakers, I recommend that you check those lists, especially if they're talking about things like security of community or protecting the Constitution, things that look more benign but really in fact are masking a hate message. And there are organizations that keep track of that, and you can easily find those again through the Southern Poverty Law Center or the Anti-Defamation League, and I really recommend that people look at that.
Yeah. That is Robin Phillips. She's the executive director of the Advocates for Human Rights. She is a strong woman, and she's using her power to create a better world, one person and one community at a time. For more information about the work she and her colleagues are doing, go to theadvocatesforhumanrights.org. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.